The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Larry Allen. Larry is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners, focusing on bridging government and industry and bringing best value to customer agencies across the board. Larry, welcome to the show.
Roger, thanks for having me. It's great to be back, and that's probably about as good a summary of Allen Federal as I've heard.
Okay, well, my pleasure, Larry, my pleasure. Hey, so it's February, and we're in the midst of the transition, and from us, I guess from a procurement perspective, as you, a keen observer of the procurement world, how's it going so far?
Let's kind of hurry up and wait, Roger. The transition as far as government procurement and contracting is concerned still has substantially more questions than it does answers, and I suspect we'll be that way at least until the springtime. And even then, while we may have some more names for people like GSA Administrator, the head of the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, it'll be probably at least the summer before some of those people are actually vetted by the Senate and approved. In the meantime, even some of the people who don't require Senate confirmation, we don't know those names yet. And that extends beyond just the classic procurement community to the handful of appointee-level chief information officers and other people that government contractors want to interact with and have to interact with in order to get business done. So even though we've had the inauguration, and we've got cabinet people being approved pretty much every day, it's still going to take a little while before we get procurement people in. And that's, I think, very frustrating for a lot of people in government contracting, because customers and the federal agencies aren't sure, should we be talking to contractors? If we're talking to contractors, what should we be talking to them about? Are our agency plans going to change? That type of thing. And the result is that, you know, business in the federal market is probably a little bit slower than it ordinarily would be.
Right. So, yeah, when you're acting in one of these positions, like as a career government employee, it's kind of really maintain the status quo until the folks come in who can provide the direction for the agency where they plan to take it moving forward.
Well, I think you're exactly right. I've kind of always looked at people in acting positions as, you know, the best you can hope for is that operation is going to be in third gear.
Right, yeah.
It's not going to be, in some cases, it's going to be idling, but it's never going to be in fourth gear or fifth gear, so you're not going to be moving at the same pace as you would be if you had the full team.
Right. And do you think, listening to the typical sort of transition, it's been a while, right, since we've had a transition to a new administration, 8 years to be in effect. So I think people forget that there is this lag time, and patience is important.
Well, I think you're exactly right, and it's an excellent point. We're transitioning from an entirely from one administration to an entirely new and different one, different party, different players. And it does take a while, but it always takes a while. I don't think that this administration is moving at a different pace fundamentally than its predecessors, but we are in the information age where people are expecting.
Even from 8 years ago when the last change, right, there's a lot more information out there.
Right, and people are expecting the pace of change to move accordingly with the rest of the world, but the wheels of government don't turn that fast, Roger.
Right. Well, I know GSA is one of your favorite places. maybe it's because I worked there.
That's right.
At one point. But and how do you think things are looking at GSA right now?
Well, I think GSA is moving in a direction where their senior leaders think they should go, but I'm not entirely sure that that's where their customers want them to go. And if I could talk to the senior leadership of the agency today, I would say, look, before you move down the path where you think people want you to be, you better make sure that that's where they want you to end up.
Right.
Because GSA at its core is a service agency that exists and succeeds only if it's fulfilling the needs of other government agencies.
Right.
And particularly in the Federal Acquisition Service, the area where you and I do a lot of our work, my sense is that while some of the activities may be well-intended, I think they're going to be wide of the mark in terms of where their customers want them to go. And you know, my concern is that at a macro level, the agency is very, very concerned about price and to the exclusion of most other things.
Yes, yeah.
And that if you are going to be the low price provider, again, you better make sure that's where your customers want you to be and what they expect you to be. There's always going to be a room for that low price provider, Roger, but GSA leaders need to understand it's not the expansive role that their agency has traditionally played. And if they're going to do that, they're probably going to be a much more limited player in government-wide acquisition.
Right. I mean, I know you made me think of an article I recently read, like, well, you don't ever want to be the lowest bidder on something.
There's, right.
Right. And that goes to the value. I mean, they really need to think and be thinking about the value proposition for agencies. And I think they, to your point about, you know, whether they're going in a direction that's not quite, their customers aren't quite comfortable with, I think, I would think that it would be, this provides an opportunity perhaps for this period right now, some, you know, frank conversations between career people at different organizations, GSA or DOD or whoever, about, you know, what the vision is and where it ought to be.
And I think that's an excellent point. Look, just because the people at GSA aren't engaging the customer agencies doesn't mean the customer agencies shouldn't be engaging GSA. They should. And this is a great time. You don't need to wait for political leaders to come in and provide top cover, because at a business line level, you kind of know what you're looking for from your service agency, from your service provider. And I would recommend the people at DOD and DHS and some of the other major GSA customers that if you haven't talked to your colleagues at GSA, you ought to be doing that to make sure that they're hearing your voice now. They're getting a lot of briefings, just like DHS and DOD and the rest of the agencies are getting internal briefings on what's been happening over the last couple of years. But it's important to reach out across agency lines and have conversations if you're going to have the best outcome across government.
Right. Hey, so you know, let's talk a little bit too. I mean, I know, you know, one of the areas there has been some action in executive orders. In particular, we saw the end of January, the executive order, the 2-for-1, people are calling it, like where, you know, and it's to address the cost of regulations, where if you issue a reg, the incremental cost of that reg has to be zero, and to offset, you know, any cost associated with new regulations, you've got to, you know, the executive order directs that 2 have to be eliminated to and eliminate those costs. So do you have any thoughts on that?
I do. I think that that's an intent to move the government in the right direction, Roger. Certainly, we've seen a substantial amount of new regs put in. You know, to be fair, really over the past 10 or 12 years, not just over the past 8, where in the 90s and early 2000s, there may have been a move to, particularly for commercial item acquisition, lessen the regulatory burden. Well, since that time, over the last decade, the trend has been exactly in the other opposite, in the other direction, to re-regulate a lot of things, whether it's commercial item or commercial service acquisition or anything else. And of course, we're focused on acquisition, but the executive order is broader, and rightly so. If you talk to colleagues in areas like energy and trade and other major national policy initiatives, there's been an explosion on those fronts in the regulatory world as well. So moving to trim the regulatory burden and say, look, we just can't add successive new layers. I suspect what we're going to find is that it'll be relatively easy for agencies to repeal two rules for every new one they implement, just because there's been so much of
a lot of targets.
Right. And there's going to be a lot of low-hanging fruit, and there are probably a lot of old regulations that will be forced into examination right now that people find are redundant, out of date, whatever. And so I think we're going to find a lot of those going away, which is good because, while we may say that they're redundant or out of date, there's always somebody somewhere.
Yeah.
Who is looking at that rule and saying, you know, this is something that I can really catch an agency with or catch a contractor with. And that's not really what the intent is. So I think moving and forcing agencies to look at their regulatory caseload is a great thing. And I hope we follow through with it.
Yeah. Well, Larry, we're up on our first break. My guest today is Larry Allen. He is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners, and we're talking about the state of acquisition as during the transition. How's that? When we come back, we'll continue discussing executive orders, Section 809 panel. We've got a whole laundry list of items to talk about. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Larry Allen. Larry is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners. And we're talking about the state of acquisition during the transition and beyond. We'll talk about we'll get you to make some predictions, Larry, at some point, maybe the last segment. But so we started a discussion. We talked about one executive order. Can you just talk generally what you see with regard to lots of executive orders issued, a lot of them impacting procurement. What do you see currently going on? Where do you see things going?
Well, then that's a great setup, Roger, because at its core, it talks about the role of executive orders in government generally. And while the president of the United States has always had an executive order capability, at least in recent history, we've really seen a proliferation of executive orders in the last administration. A lot of people said that was to try to implement things to get around an unfriendly Congress, and that may or may not have been the case, but whatever it was, it certainly proved to be an expedient way to drive executive branch activities at the federal level. And we've certainly seen a flurry of executive orders already in the new administration. So we're in a new world here, relatively speaking, where the chief executive has discovered the power of the executive order.
Right.
And it kind of looks a little bit sometimes like it might be throwing the balance, checks and balances.
Right, I remember the old book, like Imperial Presidency.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So in procurement, one of the big rules that came in the last administration was the Fair Pay and Safe Workplaces rule executive order. And then right on top of that was the contractor paid leave, leave rule. Both of which received a lot of attention, a lot of concern in the government contractor community. It was anticipated that the Trump administration would come in and that those executive orders would be among the first rescinded. Well, I think really what happened, Roger, is every market segment had their expectation for executive orders in their particular neck of the woods that would be and needed to be rescinded in their view.
So there's a long list of them, is what you're saying.
There's a long list. I've spoken to some friends of mine who are in the energy area, and they certainly have a list of executive orders that they were hoping would go by the wayside as well, as one example. And you could probably figure that for any other segment of the economy, that's probably the same case. But talking about fair pay and safe workplaces, which really got a lot of people's attention, it's been called by some the reincarnation of the contractor blacklisting rule.
From the 90s, I remember that.
From the 90s, that's exactly right. The tail end of the Clinton administration. And Congress now has gotten into the act. Most recently, House of Representatives invoking the Congressional Review Act, which gives Congress 60 days to review rules from the time that they start looking at them. And if they deem the rule to be overly burdensome or unnecessary, then Congress can take action to repeal the executive order and the rule that, in this case, fair pay and safe workplaces implemented via a final rule that had to go through the rulemaking process. So Congress would have to repeal the rule, not just the executive order. And I know that that's a good – a lot of contractors are hoping that that's what happens. In the meantime, the rule itself is being held from implementation due to a court order. The Associated Builders and Contractors have filed suit to overturn the rulemaking, and the court granted an injunction from enforcement while that case is going on. But I think that just all of that activity around that one executive order shows the magnitude of concern and the cost and burden that the contractor industry views this issue with. So hopefully we'll see something with that. But that's past history and maybe a little bit of present, Roger. For the future, I think we're going to see governing by executive order. The precedent was certainly set in the last administration. I think we're going to see it on steroids with the current administration. And we'll have to see how that plays itself out, not just in terms of government contracts, but how that affects the balance of power among the executive, judicial, and legislative branches of government. It would be kind of an interesting topic to have a constitutional scholar come and talk on, but I certainly
are you suggesting a show here?
That's right. Yeah. But I certainly don't hold myself out as one of those people. Maybe Steve Schooner. So
yeah. It's a shift in parties and control, you know, of the executive branch that sort of lends itself to this to the scrutiny. But to your point, that is there's a bigger question here about, you know, the role of the presidency versus Congress, and Congress is the first branch of government, you know, under the Constitution.
Right.
And where it goes, it will be interesting to see. And speaking of Congress, and we're going to talk a little bit about some of the acquisition reform that's gone, legislation that's gone in the NDAAs the last 2 years. And in particular, last year, they or was it 2 years? I don't, it doesn't really matter what year it was, but there's, it's like a blur. I think it was 2 years ago now. The Section 809 panel that, you know, was authorized by Congress. That's a panel of acquisition experts, government industry that's supposed to look at DoD acquisition. You know, I know you've had an opportunity to talk to some of the members of that. Can you talk a little bit about what you see? We recently had D on the show, D Lee, to talk, the chair of the 809 panel, to talk about their initiatives. But from your perspective, what's going on there?
Well, from my perspective, I've had a chance to meet with the panel and talk to several panel members, as you mentioned, Roger, and specifically about multiple award contracting, and not just the GSA multiple award schedule, but the whole area of government-wide acquisition contracts and individual agency, individual department-level multiple award contracts. And what's interesting about the discussion is that these contracts, these indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contracts, for over 20 years now, have been a benchmark through which government agencies buy billions of dollars of services and products each year. Which explains why there are so many of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they have been, particularly inside DOD, the way DOD buys a lot of information technology, and more recently, that's the way DOD buys more and more professional services.
Yep.
And yet, the Section 809 panel is looking at the fundamental question of whether multiple award contracting itself is a fundamental good, at least in terms of how it impacts the Department of Defense. That's pretty radical thinking when you consider that billions, and as you said, tens of billions of dollars go through these contracts every year. If suddenly the idea of multiple award contracting is deemed not to be a fundamental good for DOD, where does that take us? Does it take us back to the age of we're going to do single award, low bid, sealed bid contracts with one winner, winner take all, and What does that really mean? If you haven't been
For example, let's go to the sort of not the worst case scenario, but a scenario is like single award IDIQ contracts that last multiple years. Like one of the concerns is that it's like limits competition over the long run. It's an indefinite quantity contract. And how does that play out versus multiple award contracts?
Well, right. And I think the answer is inevitable and actually easy to see if you look at the broader defense industry where you're getting into weapons systems. Over time, what you've seen is substantial consolidation to the point where there are really only two or three players at most for any one weapon system. You only get two or three bidders, for any type of Air Force plane, whether it's a tanker or a fighter or whatever it is. Similarly, if you're in the Army and you're going to be doing a next generation tank, you're only going to get at best two offers from different people because everybody else has either been bought up, gone out of business, or gone into something else. Right. And it's easy to see that this could happen in the commercial services and commercial item world as well. And by the way, none of those businesses that are left are small.
Right. No, they are not.
So what are we going to do? What does this really tell us about the government's approach to small business contracting? What does that mean for DOD that maybe spends at least half of the government's procurement dollars every year if they're going to make a conscious decision to go to a single award environment? We're talking about massive upheaval in the Mark. Core.
Well, and all the investment, the infrastructure investment by the companies for all this.
That's exactly right. And look.
And speaking of investment, we have to take our next break.
All right.
Larry, my guest today is Larry Allen. He's the president of Allen Federal Business Partners. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion of transition and the state of procurement. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Larry Allen. Larry is president of Allen Federal Business Partners, and we're talking about the state of procurement during the transition. And we'll talk, moving forward, too, as we get out of the transition and into the, we get out of, let's say, second gear or first gear or whatever, right? Right, Larry? But I know you had a couple of thoughts about the 809 panel.
Well, just to finish where we were in the last segment, Roger, is the Section 809 panel is looking at the totality of DOD acquisition, and they're making some pretty radical noises about fundamental recommendations that would really take us back, in some cases, to the early 1990s in terms of acquisition. So if you're an industry and you haven't paid attention to what this panel is doing, here's your wake-up call. You need to dial in and see what the Section 809 panel is talking about and the recommendations they could potentially make so that you can make some plans about how that could affect your business moving forward if these recommendations end up making their way into a future Defense Authorization Act or even a set of DOD policies.
Yeah. All right. Wise counsel, Larry. So another thing as we look, here we are in February, there's a hiring freeze. What are you seeing or hearing about that?
Well, I think originally, Roger, a lot of contractors had looked at the hiring freeze as an opportunity. Traditionally, if the government can't hire federal employees, or even if it can't hire employees fast enough to meet the ongoing real missions that we as citizens expect of our government, the way that they've gone about that is to hire contractors to augment the federal workforce. And I think a lot of companies initially thought, well, we're going to have a freeze, which had been predicted, and that's going to lead to opportunity for us. Well, not so fast. I think we need to walk that back. Since the freeze went into effect, Roger, there have been exceptions that have come out. There have been internal policies that have said, well, a freeze doesn't really mean a freeze. And just this past week, the Pentagon came out with no fewer than 16 proposed exemptions to the freeze. So ironically, I think that the hiring freeze might end up being a net negative for contractors. First, not only will there be scarce opportunities for federal staff augmentation, secondly, all this confusion has set off a predictable number of rounds of internal meetings and discussions inside federal agencies. as they try to figure out what this means for how their agency is going to operate and what they do. Well, who's in those meetings, Roger? Well, the people the government contractors want to meet with,
right?
So that they can conduct business. So we were talking at the top of the show about how the transition inevitably leads to a slower pace of business than you would otherwise see. So, too, it's going to be the hiring freeze has an impact on the pace of acquisition and acquisition planning, simply because the people who would ordinarily be performing those functions are busy talking internally about the impact of a freeze and how their agency is going to adapt to it.
Everybody's internally looking and talking as opposed to externally talking, and it sort of builds on that sort of theme, you know, from the first segment where you talked about people don't know what direction things are going to go in as well. So it sort of compounds that. So category management, you know, what's going on there?
Well, that's another part of the transition, Roger. You know, category management was an initiative that was started by the previous administration's Office of Management and Budget. And the idea was to standardize government contracting and acquisition. And the original idea was to identify best practices and to encourage federal agencies to use contracts and contracting methods that had been shown to have those best practices in them. And I think a lot of people in industry were like, okay, that's pretty good. If the government's going to buy smarter, I like to categorize the early stages of category management as recommendations and thou should pronouncements. But at the end of the administration, we kind of got into proposals for mandatory, thou shalt do this, which I think is a recipe for disaster in government acquisition, because history, frankly, is not on the side of those who would mandate programs through which government agencies can buy things. Now we have the new administration coming in, and I think it's a question as to what they're going to do with it. I've heard both things, frankly, Roger. I've heard that, well, it was the previous administration's management initiative, so the new administration's going to try something new and may disband a lot of category management work. But I've also heard that certain people, depending on who gets in to some of these critical positions, might want to pick up where the previous administration left off. So we're going to have to see. In the meantime, our friends at GSA are moving full steam ahead, implementing category management and reorganizing the Federal Acquisition Service around category management lines, which is certainly their right to do, but I think it's confusing their agency customers.
Right.
And if those changes weren't well communicated to external agency customers beforehand, that could end up making it more difficult for your federal customer to find the person they need to help them with an acquisition.
That's a great point. You know, maybe it makes sense for GSA on its level to organize that way to better serve its clients. But even some of the messaging around it now, I don't know what you think, but I just get your question. So if you take the term service out of the division you're in and replace it with category, what message are you sending to the customer who's already very skeptical and concerned about category management as a thou shall do kind of centralized directive approach? What message are you sending when you remove the word service?
I think you're on the right track there. And what we're really talking about is not just semantics. We're talking about the image that you as a customer service agency are portraying to your customers. Service, by its definition, indicates we know we're in the service business and we're going to try and take care of our customers. Information technology category, just to pick on one service that was renamed, sounds like something out of Lost in Space.
Okay.
And you know, it's a very kind of a sterile type of a name. And what does that really mean?
Right. You don't know what it means. That's the point. Well, you got to have some marketing here, right?
I mean,
that's part of the role, right?
Right.
And
they did this, you know, if you're going to make those types of changes in industry, whether it's government contracting or any other part of the commercial world, before you do that, you're going to have tested it.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have focus grouped it. You're going to have piloted it with customers. You're not going to just decide over the course of a month that you're going to make this change. You're going to go out and make sure that your customers understand it and that they think it's a good thing for you. And GSA, I don't think, did that, and they probably should have.
Right. Hey, well, Larry, you know what? We're already up on the next break. And speaking of marketing, yeah, right?
Getting That's out right.
There, we got to take. But when we come back, let's talk a little bit about people and the importance of people. To your point, in this segment, you talked about folks not being in positions and what it means, and there are certain policies might go certain ways depending on the people who are there. That's a great area for discussion. My guest today is Larry Allen. He is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Larry Allen. Larry is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners, and we've been talking about the state of acquisition in a time of transition. Huh? I would like that for a tagline, Larry. So in one of the, all these rules and regulations and all that stuff, that infrastructure, executive orders, management policies are all, interesting to talk about. But at the end of the day, it does get down to the people who get appointed to various positions. And you made a great point about what survives or doesn't survive any administration transition depends on not necessarily just the people at the top, whether the secretaries of departments, but that infrastructure of political appointees who, fill in all the other positions. And, how do you see that, shaping up in the procurement world?
Well, I think in terms of specific people, Roger, you hear a couple of names, but I'm not sure that they're ripe for being thrown about. But
yeah.
But the names that you hear are people who are experienced.
Yes.
And that's really is the key, is that you want some people who understand government acquisition and maybe have some experience either from the private sector or government, ideally both.
Right.
You just don't want the same old, same old. You want to have some new ideas and some good thought leadership, but you also want to have thought leadership that's purposeful, and that requires a little bit of experience in this market. So we're looking for people who are coming into critical positions, whether they're at GSA or whether they're at the Office of Federal Procurement Policy or DOD acquisition, the new acquisition job that was created, who understand acquisition. This isn't their first acquisition rodeo,
right?
Particularly in government. They've got some sound business ideas. Maybe they've been in the business sector for a while, understand what's required to run a successful business type organization, particularly if you're at GSA, which, as we've discussed today, is a customer age service agency.
Yes.
So the people do matter. And history has shown that if you drop people into positions who don't have the experience, then that can lead to a lot of confusion and the tail wagging the dog a lot of times, Roger, which is counterproductive. And who's it counterproductive for? Well, ultimately, it's counterproductive for the efficient working of government.
Right.
It's a pain in the neck for contractors to deal with. But, we've all heard that, from some contractors who say, look, I'll do business with a grass skirt if that's what my customer wants me to do. So to a certain extent, the contractor community is adaptable. But what you really want are experienced people who can drive good outcomes for government, who can reduce overhead, reduce lead times, get better mission-critical support, and deliver maximum value for the taxpayer.
So, as part of that, just your thoughts. I mean, you need the people. They need to have the authority, right? Or there's got to be, and I'm not saying it's the right, it's the way they ought to, way somebody ought to go, but I just harken back to the National Performance Review and the Hammer Wars and all that there was, and the vice president at the time was the heading all that up. So, that gave it like this huge level of credibility and legitimacy and sort of an authority fundamentally to try to engineer and make change, you know, is that I mean, if we want to really change the government, there's got to be some strategy along those lines.
Well, and right? I think that looking back to the National Performance Review, regardless of your ideological affiliation, that was a high watermark, particularly in terms of government acquisition, because people were empowered. People were empowered to do what? People were empowered to take risks and to do things differently, and they were rewarded for good outcomes. Today, we have a very risk-averse acquisition culture, and I think we spoke earlier in the program of last decade of regulatory overload. There were some reasons for that, but you know, the pendulum never stops in the middle, so arguably, I think it's kind of swung over to the side where we have a very risk-averse acquisition community, a lot more things that people not only they can't do, Roger, but they're afraid to do.
Yeah.
And your point is an excellent one. We need to make it okay for people to take risks. We need to, if we're going to put quality people in important jobs, we need to give them the authority to make important decisions. And if they mess up, well, you know, there are multiple levels of accountability in government. We're not ever at an absence for that. But we ought to at least give quality people the opportunity to show what they're capable of doing. And if you don't do that, and if you're known for not doing that, then you're not going to attract the type of people you want in the first place. And we're going to end up just being in an endless loop of systems that don't deliver the way they should be.
Right. Hey, Larry, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you a question about this. So you recently were on a panel discussing transactional data. What do you think the future of that is? Or where do you think they're going? Or what's the thought out? So maybe what are observers saying out there? Take it off you.
Well, Roger, this is GSA's transactional data rule specific to the schedules program. The idea is to make it easier for schedule customers to do accurate pricing comparisons when they're doing their own buying decisions based on what other agencies have done before them. Great intent. Ultimately, I think in its current iteration, Roger, the transactional data rule is going to fail for two fundamental reasons. The first is that GSA did a great job of rolling this out to contractors, but unfortunately, they did that before they had trained their internal staff. So you literally have situations where contracting specialists, anyway, are asking contractors, how do I do this? Well, you know, that's not... You want the contracting people inside the agency to have some idea of how to roll out the new policy themselves. And so I think...
Yeah, that would be good.
This was really jumping the gun on the part of GSA management.
You think the end of the administration had anything to do with that?
Oh, I'm sure it did. I'm sure it did. There was a lot of a rush, I think, to roll this out. There have been a lot of discussions inside GSA for a couple of years, Roger, but not at the line level. There hadn't been any instructions given to contracting officers and contract specialists. So I think that it's going to stumble. It's already stumbling right out of the block because of the lack of training that GSA has given its people internally to implement this. The second thing, and I think ultimately the fatal flaw of TDR, is that it assumes that you can account for the multiple variables in how different companies price their solutions and come out at the end of the day with an apples-to-apples pricing comparison. And unless we're talking about pure commodities, and even then, pure commodities sold in fairly limited quantities, you're not going to be able to get those accurate comparisons simply because the pricing variability, even inside a company, regardless of companies that are inside
Absolutely.
A particular segment, there are more pricing variables than there are colors in the rainbow by a lot.
Yes.
And will you get data out at the other end that tries to show a comparison? Sure you will. Is it going to be accurate enough for your customer to make a good comparison? Probably not. And what is that going to do? Well, unfortunately, I think it may further undermine the image of GSA and its customer agency's view. So I would urge GSA leaders to be really cautious about this. I would actually stop implementation of it, make sure that first it's really what my customers want to have happen, which I think is problematic. Second, if you do find that customers want it, you've got to train your own people up before you send them into battle. And third, you have to make very sure that whatever system you're using is going to be able to give you a result, and understand that you may bite off
a meaningful result.
Yeah, may bite off more than you can chew. There may be only a certain limited universe of products, and certainly not in services, but even in products, a limited universe where any system, government or otherwise, can spit out accurate comparisons. And you got to be, if you find that, then you got to be happy with that and say, declare victory and say, on to the next thing.
All right. You know, Larry, yeah, that's a great thought. We're up at the last moment. I would say, you know what, the only real sort of close to apples comparison is putting out a competitive RFQ and a statement of work and getting proposals.
That's exactly
right. Everybody's
going
to have their own solution, but it's apples and apples to the extent you evaluate those against the criteria.
And
it's
real
competition.
Time.
It's real time. That's
yep.
The most efficient, effective, sound way of doing that. I want to thank my guest today, Larry Allen. Larry, it's a great discussion on the state of procurement in a time of transition. Larry Allen, President, Allen Federal Business Partners, and you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Fed News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.